Hi, this is Bill Teeple. You may not recognize me because I got a bit of a cold today and my voice is kind of weird, but I'm here with my co-host, Alan Cobb, and we've brought back, we had Greg Thatcher here a few weeks back, and we talked about his churchyard drawings, but there's so much more that we can mine from the mind of Greg that we've brought him back. So here we have Greg Thatcher. Now, we thought it would be interesting to review the development of the arts here in Fairfield, because it's known throughout the region as an art colony and an art center, and we have the well-known art walk that won the award of tourism event of the year not long ago. So Fairfield is on the map as an art town, but it'd be kind of interesting to go back, since Greg is a player in this history, and kind of review how all this came about. Well, actually, Fairfield, as a center for dialogue of ideas, goes way back to the days of the Chautauquas.
Yeah.
Here in, people would come from far and wide to the Chautauqua gathering, which was a movement all over the United States. So it's, and we've had Parson College here.
That's
so
right.
It's been an interesting town going way back. And there's been an active art movement here going way back with the Fairfield Art Association,
right,
which is, must be, what, 40 years old by now?
Ah, even more. Could be, yeah, at least that. I think at least that 40 years old. And they've basically been the bedrock of everything that's ever happened here.
And so we've had a strong interest in the arts.
Yeah.
I mean, many of the community members have been members of the Fairfield Art Association forever. It's been a large membership. What we saw was layers developing.
Right, right,
we had the bedrock layer,
right,
and then we have the MUM, MIU, coming here. And it brought with us a seminal figure in connecting the art activity of Fairfield up with, we might say, the national, international art scene.
And that was
Michael Caine.
Right, right. Peter Erskine and Michael Caine.
Well, tell us a little, because you were back here in those days. And
I was here then, and Michael Caine, I love Michael Caine. Michael Caine and Charlotte, actually. And Peter Erskine were all, they were the kind of founding faculty. And Michael has always been and continues to be, he's really works very, very hard, and so does Charlotte. And he was having connections in Chicago, LA, New York. That was with his earlier work when he was doing the routed wood and the different things. You're familiar with those, I think, yeah. So he was doing those. And at that time, Charlotte was working on a series of knitted pieces. And Charlotte ended up getting some very nice commissions. And her work just started, you know, again in the same areas in New York and Chicago, LA, started to kind of take off. And they connected up with people. So they're very good friends and had Agnes Martin come here. Agnes Martin continues to be a friend of theirs, so she came to the university and gave lectures and all that. And then Peter Erskine then came, and he was a sculptor. And he took over the chairmanship after a while because Michael kind of lost interest and he wanted to do his own work. And they just, you know, it just kept developing. Then a bunch of new people came in. And one of the persons that came in was Jim Shrosbury. And I don't know if people are aware of that, but Jim is probably one of the top 30 to 50 ceramics artists in the United States. He's really good. And he, over the years, has been exhibiting, again, in the same places as Michael has, different galleries, but San Francisco, all over the place. And then, most recently, probably the last 10 years or so, he's been kind of working with different, the university circuit, if you want to call it that. And he's been doing a lot of teaching at the U of I, and you know, his work is traveling around and he'll do lectures and things like that. And his work is continuing to skyrocket and take off. And Jim is now the chairman of the art department and has developed probably one of the strongest departments within the university, which is the ceramics department. And it's been very strong for a very, very long time. And then you have Gertie, who's, you know, I mean, what can you say about Gertie? The guy's unbelievably brilliant. And, you know, any book that's about computers, he's probably had, either he edited it or he actually wrote it. And, you know, he continues to do things with that. And then there's, you know, they're doing website design. They're doing all different kinds of things. And then Jill Brown is here now. And Jill is, again, she's very, very well known and doing things with photography and a lot of mixed media things that she's doing with her work. So that was interesting because you have, you know, when you have a university and you have a town, and sometimes there's a, can be a little problematic between the two, especially if you escalate that where you have these strange people that meditate for 20 minutes theoretically in the morning and 20 minutes theoretically in the afternoon, and then they have the TM cities and all of that stuff. So it's, you know, there's some difference there. You know, it's just, you know, you have any town, anytime you have a university in a town, there's always some. But we, over the years, we've tried to develop that and work with that.
Well, and don't you think the arts has been one of the ways that we've bridged the gap?
Well, actually, you know, if you stop and you think, yes, and I'll explain that, but actually if you stop and think about it, you know, I came here in 1978, and I've been here constantly, either working for the university or for the Marshy School, you know, in the art department. And there's a little stint that we'll talk about where I developed and worked with Mark on the ICA. But during that time, there's been lots of people that have come through, and lots of people with very deep pockets. But who's stayed? Who has stayed? It's the artists. The artists, the writers, the poets, the musicians, the, all of those kind of, those are really the people that, that have been drawn and that actually stay here. The wealthy people kind of come and go. And, you know, maybe there's Black Friday or, you know, Dark Monday or whatever these times are, and they'll have all this money, and then all of a sudden it's all gone, and then they have to go somewhere else to make money. But we've stayed. You know, we've stayed and we continue to build the thing, which I think is really interesting, which became the basis of the art walk, I think, is that it just was something there. So if we go back...
It gets to be, and it's not only just stayed, the artists, we have artists coming from, that have nothing to do with meditation now,
yeah,
just because it's such a rich art center.
Yeah.
It's just gotten richer and richer and richer,
yeah,
which led you to, into developing the ICA, which we'll talk about, and me starting Gallery 51
East. That's right.
Because we wanted to like have an interface with some of this art.
Yeah. Well, what we found when we came here is that, you know, you had certain faculty members that were involved in marketing and exhibiting and doing all of that with their work, but there wasn't anything that was organized to try to get something to bring the town up so there would be greater awareness to the town. And I think that happens, you know, most people, you're interested in your own career and, you know, that's where your attention goes. Either you're making your work or you're trying to develop it and send it out. So Mark Zimmerman had an interesting idea, and he came and talked to me. He goes, I want to develop an art center. And he says, I want you to run it. I said, okay. I said, I've never done that before, but I've had a lot of experience when I went to school working in galleries and doing all that. And I said, okay. So we had to come up with an idea, so we came up with calling it the Institute for Creative Arts, ICA. And then we had to find a building. So you look around and there's, you know, where could we get an old building? We found the old Broadway building. And at that time, the old Broadway building, there wasn't anybody in there. It was very, very run down. And
but it was the famous Loudoun building.
It was the famous Loudoun building, yeah. And a lot of that stuff was still around when we were doing it. So it was starting to be fixed up or trying to be fixed up. So then we went in and we took...
Let me just interrupt briefly. I have, for the larger radio audience, the Loudoun Company was one of the original industries in Fairfield.
Founding industries.
And they manufactured material moving machinery and equipment,
yeah,
and overhead cranes and chains.
That's
and
right.
Farm things and sliding door brackets and things. And at their peak, and I'm not sure what years that was, but I would guess probably during and after the Second World War.
Yeah.
They were the largest single shipping source on the entire Burlington and Northern and Santa Fe Railroad.
That is very interesting. They a lot of that was more, cast, too, wasn't it?
It was almost all cast.
Cast and then refined.
Cast iron. There were foundries all over Fairfield.
Yeah.
So the Loudoun Company was quite a seminal element in the evolution of this.
So it's only fitting that the ICA would
go there,
itself in the Loudoun building. Yeah.
Well, we didn't think of it in that way. We were just looking for a big space that was cheap, you know. So we went in, and it, you know, the building was pretty funky at the time, and you know, none of the floors had been sanded, and you know, it had this this set of stairs and everything. So we climbed all the way up to the top floor, and it was just this huge, big open space. And I think it was 14,000 square feet. I think it was 14,000 square feet. So then Mark Zimmerman and I laid it all out of what we wanted. What was his idea? What did he want? Because he was the money behind it, and I was the shaker and mover that would get it done. So what we did in the end was we had 14 artist studios, because we wanted to create a place where artists could work together, which was a really cool idea. And then we had a contemporary gallery, and we had a papermaking studio, because I was working in paper at that time, so we brought it up, and we had a ballet studio. So this whole big space. So we created this thing, we did the floors, we had the Amish come in and put up walls and, you know, painted everything. I can still picture in my mind how many gallons of paint that we went through to paint the whole thing. It was amazing. Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, there was a classy site.
It was.
Because I wasn't living here at the time, but I'd come and visit Fairfield, and I was amazed when I saw this place. This was a first class art venue.
Yeah. Well, we wanted not to skimp. You know, we wanted to make sure that it was done inexpensively, but it was done with taste. So, because people, we wanted it to have something as it was, it would bring people in, would encourage people to come in, it would be somewhere where they could meet artists, there was sales going on and all this. So once we got the thing set up, then it was interesting because there's a lot of meditating artists. And through the university and my contacts there, and I was continuing to be on faculty there part-time, so I was adjunct faculty at that time, teaching one or two classes the whole time when I was running the ICA. We had this incredible connections. So we started to think about, okay, now we've got all this space. We filled it with artists. We had dance things going on. And then we thought, okay, well, how can we bust open the state of Iowa? How can we make sure that they're going to understand who we are? How can we do that? So this is before the computer. This is before all of that. So we had a typewriter, and we would have a professional level exhibition every 2 weeks. And then I went through all the records for the state of Iowa, all the museums and all of that, collected all those names of galleries, museums, the Iowa Arts Council, and every 2 weeks I would send them an invitation and I would send them what we're doing. And we just kept it up. And we had articles written, a paper come, you know, the KTVO would come, all those people. So this just kept happening. And it wasn't that we would have kind of low-level shows. We had David Hansen there. We had professional photographers. All the art department would exhibit there. We would have many, many great variety of exhibits, and they all were good. You know, they were all professional quality. So it was really a nice venue to have. Mm-hmm. And then we started kind of making contact with the Iowa Arts Council, and they wanted to invite us up. So we all went up and we met with them, and then they came down, and then in the end, they had some of us on their board for a little while, or, you know, reviewing grants and different things. So it started to be this really nice kind of interaction that was starting to happen, because they were seeing that Fairfield was really the place where it was happening. You know, there was something that was happening here that was unique, and that it was unrelenting. It just, you know, it was going all the time, and the quality was very, very high. Mm-hmm. So because we did that, it sort of set this town up as the art town. So we took what was here, you know, the university was here, you had the Fairfield Cultural Society with Michael Sternfeld and everything that they had done, which was fantastic. And then we had the Art Association, and we just put this new little slant on it and started saying, look, and this is where all this is happening. Look at all these artists here. Look what we can do here. And it started to really bring a lot of statewide attention. And then the Mark Petrick and Claudia Petrick started having the source, and they would do reviews, and you know, just after there, everything just kind of took off. And we just kept it up. You know, we just kept it up until then there was one of these, I can't remember if it was Black Monday or something, when the finances just went south. And then it became very difficult because you can't, I mean, how can you run an arts organization if you don't have any money? And usually it takes about 5 or 6 years for them to get up on their feet and to be established where there's some enough revenue to at least, you know, keep the thing going, to pay the rent, to pay the heating, to pay, you know, for clerical help.
We know all about this.
Yeah, he knows all about this. It's, you know, yes. It's
well,
it's
and Alan's the president
takes,
of
takes
Icons.
A little longer. Yeah. It takes a little longer than we've had so
yeah,
far.
It's a tough.
But, you know, let me assert here that the arts flourish when you have a marriage of creative talent and patronage.
Yes.
Well, it takes both things to make it happen. Yeah. You know, you can have great artists living in garrets, and their work, one day after they're dead, the work is appreciated. But you have Florence, and you have the Elizabethan era, and you have Paris, and you have all of these things that are so romantic and impressionist. Yeah. When you have a group of, especially when the group of talents is allowed to just go deep together, because there's a collective consciousness that's involved too. Yeah. And then there's the patronage that allows them to do that and allows it to flourish. And well, this was what you just described to me.
Yeah. Well, and it's the patronage that gets the benefit into society.
Yeah.
Without the patronage, the artists don't stop because they
can't. The artists get their fulfillment already.
They go ahead and do their thing, but with the patronage, then the art suddenly begins to have an influence on the quality of life in the community, and that's where people start moving into the town, and the economics start to grow.
It can be once the society wakes up to the fact that this is a viable.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on is real, it's viable, it's culturally relevant, then they can, if they're smart, then they start to say, well, you know, we could use this as a means to bring people, to bring attention to our town.
Sure. Well, and that's where, startups, you know, spring up, and that's where even a company that's well-established, if they want to create a rural, you know, a rural office somewhere, they're looking at the creative pool of people available that they might hire, and they're looking at the quality of life. Do they want to ask their employees to live in a place like this?
Right.
So by making the whole community attractive and vibrant and creative and full of possibilities, you make the place economically substantially more viable.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, people forget that, especially right after Gloomy Tuesday or whatever
it was in Black Monday.
Then suddenly money is short and the art's the first thing people can do without. So they tend to cut all the programs from the schools and stop teaching music and so on. But in the process, they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot because this is where the innovation comes from. And it's this climate of creative thinking that leads to business innovation and all the other kinds that actually solve problems in the community, even though they're not solved by someone who makes paintings. They're solved by that atmosphere of
pool of people,
ideas sharing and flowing around and creative thinking and
And that was the whole basis of what Mark Zimmerman wanted to create with the ICA, was to create a kind of a fertile situation, a nourishing situation where the artists could help each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, we would take the idea if somebody was traveling to go to Chicago or they were going to go to New York or, you know, San Francisco, then we'd say, hey, when you go there, you know, you should, you know, if you're going to go and cruise all the galleries, then take a card if you think that my work would fit there. So it's that kind of, you know, rather than just thinking about yourself, you start thinking about everybody else, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, it worked.
Yeah, and it's such a classic example.
No, it was really, it was a nice situation. And it wasn't, you know, we tried to create something that was more kind of from the heart, you know, more that more nourishing a situation rather than, you know, this is the Art Institute for the Creative Arts and, you know, this heady kind of thing that was, you know, what is that all about? You know, it's just...
The arbiters of taste.
Yeah. It's just, you know, we didn't want to get that because it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
You know, it just would not work.
Yeah.
So we just didn't do that. And we just wanted to encourage people to be creative. Encourage, you know, from classes for little kids to having people doing dance to, you know, everything. Just have everything going on as much as possible. We got involved in having films and, you know, we did everything. You know, we did everything. And some of it happened because we needed to try to pay the rent with some of the films. We needed to show films and do things so that it would help them. But, you know, in the end, when we had backing, it was a little bit easier. But as the backing became less and less, then we really had to scramble.
Yeah.
You know, we really had to scramble.
Yeah.
And then it just became obvious that there just wasn't, the patronage wasn't there. The financial climate was such that it just became more and more difficult. So you'd spend all your time trying to figure out creative things that you could do to bring in money. And that kind of put a bad spin on the whole thing. So we just had to kind of close the doors on it in the end.
So how many years did that go on?
That was about 4 years, I think. Four years.
A golden age. Fairfield.
Yeah.
But then I came to town.
Then Bill came to town.
And
that's right.
I felt the vacuum.
Yeah.
Because there was... that was over. I had seen it.
Right.
And it was like a golden age in my mind of Fairfield. But when I got here, there wasn't much going on.
Right.
But I wanted to share the work of these great artists with the community, have some place where this work could be displayed in its own home. Because I felt it was most powerful here in its own home.
No, I agree.
So then I was teaching art, and there were some rooms available where I was teaching, so I rented those rooms and I just started hanging.
Started out, yeah.
I thought it'd be fun to just hang some art and people could just wander up and look at it. I didn't realize it was going to turn into...
Yeah, unbeknownst to Bill.
Yeah.
Whole horse you have to ride now.
Well, then I did the... before you know it, we're doing the receptions and then we're starting to send out postcards.
Started.
Then we're doing art cards and we're doing the whole thing. And you're renting a gallery and you've got a $25,000 annual budget to keep the thing going. I thought I'd rented a couple of rooms for $200 a month and that was going to
be it.
But it snowballed on me.
Yeah.
So what we did is we established a membership. Now, it took some years to get it. First of all, we had to move down on the square and get a focal
point.
That's right. But we have 250 members in town. They all put in a little bit every year with their dues, and that's how we keep it going. But it's still touch and go.
Yeah, it's very smart, though.
But that's very smart.
The deep pockets are not, and we've had some economic difficulties recently, too, which have made the big donations not there anymore. So we really survive on this $80, $50, $80, $200.
Well, you did something that was really interesting, though. This recently, you had this exhibit where it was, what was the name of it?
We did an auction, art auction.
It was an art auction.
Yeah.
And then, you know, again, who are the people that helped you?
The
artists.
Absolutely.
The artists put in the work because they want to see you keep going. So again, it goes back.
So, it blew my mind.
It was
Work
incredible.
Came from all over the state.
Artists we didn't even know.
Des Moines and Cedar Rapids and
they want to see you succeed. And so, you know, the thing I think is important is that as long as you're keeping to what your vision is, what you intended, and other people buy into that vision, then the artists will be always the people who will help you. Always.
Well, I was so pleased.
Yes, it was
encouraged to see how much support we had from all over the state.
Well, that's
everybody.
The nicest compliment that you could ever get is the people who you are serving give back to you without any question. Just here, Bill, you know, take some work.
I was very pleased.
But it's
it raised us more money out of that auction than we've ever gotten out of any event. So I don't want to overuse the artist's goodwill, but it was So it was a no-brainer that I had sort of put off.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I hate to tap
we,
the artist.
We were at zero when that show opened. Yeah. And it...
Not double odd zero, just zero.
Just zero. Or 0.00.
Zero.
It's like, where's the money?
Yeah. It took us from nothing to 3 months of complete viability. And,
yeah,
and
fantastic.
A couple of other.
So then take that.
It does take creative thinking to keep it all going. You know,
right. Which is really fun, but just don't ever forget that you know everybody's behind you. You know, when we started working with the Art Walk, you know everybody's trying to sell their work and you know make a lot of money. And I just thought, you know, the thing that would be really interesting to do is have an exhibit. You probably remember it's because your work was in it.
No, you did it.
Yeah. So we would have these exhibits where you could buy a framed artwork, original artwork. I think it was like $50 or $75.
They had a $50 show or something.
$50 show. Mm-hmm. So we had all the artists, again, the whole pool of people that we know. Mm-hmm. We got a space for free, so we didn't have to pay for it. We stuck them all up on the wall. Man, they went like hotcakes. Just everything went. Mm-hmm. So people could collect something.
And it was geared definitely to the average person in Fairfield who would want a work of art but couldn't afford $2,000 piece.
Yeah.
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 But we show the high-end contemporary
at
Icon, and you did too, because we want to show the full range. We want to raise everybody's level of art, but the market isn't here. So we have to figure out other angles
to the market.
And the membership has been that, the $50 show.
Yeah.
But to finish this off, I'll just mention that the Art Walk came about because the rest of the town recognized what was going on, and they started to get the identity and use it as an art destination.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.